Now I ended. The Senate is back in session. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would you continue down the order of business where we left off today, please?
Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Resolutions. Resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Concurrent resolutions. Senator from Cole.
President, for the benefit of the body, Matt Vereen from KOM8 News has been granted permission for photos and video in the Senate chambers today.
Thank you, Senator. Senator from the 4th, what purpose do you rise?
Point of personal privilege.
Senator from 4th request a point of personal privilege. Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, earlier today, two employees of Laclede Gas, union brothers of mine, were working in North St. Louis, one in his early 20s, one in his 50s. They were working at a lady's house to start a gas service. They had been laughing and joking with her all morning. Someone walked up, shot the 21-year-old as he was operating a jackhammer, then shot the 50-year-old in his backhoe, then shot him again. The 50-year-old died instantly. The 21-year-old had made it back to the hospital where he perished. Two people that were just trying to put in a day's work and go home. And I would ask that we do a moment of silence for them and their families.
All the senators, please rise for a moment of silence. Senator, thank you for bringing that to us, our attention. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports of standing committees.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of reports from standing committees.
The order of business report standing committee. Senator Buchanan.
Mr. President, I'll have that report for you very shortly.
I'll call you right back. Thank you, Senator. Senator from Green.
Mr. President, your Committee on Judiciary, Civil, and Criminal Jurisprudence has a report.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Judiciary and Civil and Criminal Jurisprudence, to which was referred House Bill 909, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Dixon, Chairman.
Senator from Cape Girardeau, do you have a report for us?
No, sorry.
Okay. Will you have it later, or I'll call you? Mean to come back to you after a while? Okay, thank you, Senator. Senator from St. Genevieve.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Senate Education Committee has a report.
Please send a report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Education, to which was referred House Committee Substitute House Bill 631, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attached do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Romine, Chairman.
Senator from the 13th.
Your Committee on Progress and Development has a report.
Send a report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Progress and Development, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 348, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Progress and Development, to which was referred House Joint Resolution 10, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the joint resolution do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Progress and Development, to which was referred House Committee Substitute Number 2, House Bill 502, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Walsh, Chairman.
Senator Buchanan, you have your report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Health and Pensions has a report.
Send a report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Health and Pensions, to which was referred House Committee Substitute for House Bill 304, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attached do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Schaaf, Chairman.
Senator from Cape Girardeau.
Mr. President, your Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs has a report.
Send a report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs, to which was referred House Bill 871, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attached do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Wallingford, Chairman.
Senator from Andrew.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Committee on Local Governments and Elections has a report.
Send a report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Local Government and Elections, to which was referred House Bill 843, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attach do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Local Government and Elections, to which was referred House Bill 200, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attach do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Local Government and Elections, to which was referred House Committee Substitute House Bill 703, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Local Government and Elections, to which was referred House Bill 956, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attached do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Local Government and Elections, to which was referred House Committee Substitute House Bill 199, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attached do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Local Government and Elections, to which was referred House Bill 87, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute hereto attached do pass. Respectfully submitted.
Assess of order. Proceed, Secretary.
Respectfully submitted, Senator Hageman, Chairman.
Senator from Jefferson.
Mr. President, your Insurance and Banking Committee has a report.
Please send a report forward. Send the report forward, or please read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Insurance and Banking, to which was referred, House Bill 587, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Whelan, Chairman.
Senator from Callaway.
Mr. President, your Committee on Professional Registration has a report.
Send the report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Professional Registration, to which was referred, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 258, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Professional Registration, to which was referred, House Bill 349, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Professional Registration, to which was referred, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 316, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Riddle, Chairman.
Senator from Franklin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety has a report.
Senator, report forward. Madam Secretary, read the report.
Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred, House Bill 558, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred, House Bill 586, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred, House Bill 256, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee Substitute here to attach do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred, House Committee Substitute, House Bill 645, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred, House Committee Substitute for House Bill 183, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred, House Committee Substitute, House Bill 542, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred, House Bill 61, begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred, House Bill 128, 678, 701, and 964, begs leave to report that it has considered.
Senate will come to order while the clerks are trying to do their business. Madam Secretary, please continue.
begs leave to report that it has considered the same and recommends that the Senate Committee substitute hereto attached do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred House Bill 811, begs leave to report that it has considered same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred House Bill 805, begs leave to report that it has considered same and recommends that the bill do pass. Also, Mr. President, your Committee on Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety, to which was referred House Bill 664, begs leave to report that it has considered same and recommends that the bill do pass. Respectfully submitted, Senator Schatz, Chairman.
Senator from Newton, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Please refer Senate Concurrent Resolution 26, House Concurrent Resolution 9, House Concurrent Resolution 35, House Committee Substitute for House Committee Resolution 47 of the Rules, Joint Rules, Resolution Ethics.
They will be so referred. Senator from Call.
Thank you, Mr. President. Without objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of House bills on third reading. And I'd ask you to recognize the Senator from Franklin County on House Bill 302 and 228.
Hearing no objection, the Senate will go to the order of business of House bills on third reading. First is House Committee Substitute for House Bill 302 and 228 with Senate Committee Substitute, Senator from Franklin.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that House Bill 302 with Senate Committee Substitutes be taken up for third read and final passage.
The Senator from Franklin moves that House Bill number 302-328 with Senate Committee Substitute be taken up for third reading and final passage. As many of the opinion that motion shall prevail, say aye.
Aye.
Those of the contrary say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. Senator, do you care to move for the adoption of the Senate substitute?
I move for the adoption of the substitute.
You care to explain your bill,
and
Senator?
I will explain it. House Bill 302 is a companion bill to Senate Bill 265, the Blue Alert Bill. Put simply, this bill will create a similar system to the Amber Alert system, but alerts will go out whenever a law enforcement officer has been killed or assaulted in the line of duty. The alert will provide information on the suspected assailants and will help law enforcement apprehend the suspects faster. This bill has gone through some minor changes in the committee. We put the core has remained, and the concept is the same, but we did remove the oversight board because we believe the Department of Public Safety can be trusted with the oversight of the operation of this program. Participation is voluntary for local law enforcement, for TV and radio broadcasters as well. Knowingly making a false report, though, triggers an alert, and that triggers an alert is a Class A misdemeanor, unless that false report results in serious injury or death, which is a Class E felony. Again, I believe this is one of the most straightforward bills we've had this year. We'd like to put this on the governor's desk as soon as possible so our law enforcement community will know that the state government has their back. I do realize that where we are in the timing, that there are going to be amendments. I would appreciate brevity in that process. So with that, I will answer any questions.
The Senator from Franklin has moved for the adoption of House Committee Substitute for House Bill 302 and 228 with Senate Committee Substitute. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Andrews. Purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward. And has your amendment been distributed?
It has not. It is being copied, and I would ask that the wait reading be waived until it's been distributed, and I won't close until it has been distributed.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived. And Senator from Andrew, do you move for the adoption?
Mr. President, I do move the adoption of the amendment.
Senator from Buchanan. Purpose do you rise?
Motion.
The Senator from Buchanan has requested a privilege motion. Senator, you may proceed.
I move that debate on the adoption of Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bills 302 and 228 be postponed until 10 a.m. Friday, April the 21st, 2017.
The Senator restate your motion again, please.
I move that debate on the adoption of Senate Committee Substitute for House Committee Substitute for House Bills 302 and 228 be postponed until 10 a.m. Friday, April the 21st, 2017.
Senator from Buchanan has moved that House Committee Substitute for House Bills 302 and 228 be postponed till 10 a.m. The adoption of the Senate Committee Substitute be postponed until 10 a.m. on Friday. What's the date on Friday? To Friday the 21st. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the second, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, pursuant to Rule 86, I would ask that one senator join me in requesting that that motion be reduced to writing.
Senator from Buchanan, would you submit your request in writing? Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from Buchanan. What purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, to speak on my motion.
Senator, you may proceed.
Mr. President, I would like to dedicate this discussion and a reading to Representative Glenn Kolkmeyer from the other side of the building. Mr. President, I introduced a bill this year. It was Senate Bill number 198, and it was entitled to amend Chapter 304 by adding thereto one new section relating to weigh station and inspection site bypass services. Now, my bill got a hearing here in the Senate. And Representative T.J. Berry introduced the very same bill over in the House. And that bill went through Transportation Committee and eventually made it to the floor of the House. And
Senator from Andrew, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I do believe that the motion that we're being discussed is under Rule 73, and is, as I read it, the pending motion to lay on the table merits of the question shall not be discussed, and no motion to postpone to a certain date to commit or postpone definitely being decided shall be again allowed the same day at the same stage of the bill. So I don't believe it's a debatable motion, Mr. President.
Senator, are you making a point of order?
That it's not a debatable motion.
Your point of
order? We either voted up or down. Am I correct in that? I guess maybe it's also a question.
Your point of order...
I'm wrong.
Will be referred to the President Pro Tem of the Senate. Does any dissenters desire to be heard on the point of order? Senator from Buchanan, purpose do you rise? Senator from Buchanan, you are recognized.
The motion to postpone to a certain day is debatable. Rule 73 states, when a question is under debate, no motion shall be received but to adjourn to lay on the table for the previous question, to postpone to a day certain, to commit or amend, to postpone indefinitely, which several motions shall have precedence in the order in which they are arranged. Pending the motion to lay on the table, the merits of the question shall not be discussed, and no motion to postpone to a certain day, to commit or postpone indefinitely being decided, shall again be allowed on the same day at the same stage of the bill or proposition. Now, Mr. President, that second sentence there is the most important sentence. It says, pending the motion to lay on the table, the merits of the question shall...
Senator from Andrew.
The senator has explained it well. I was reading it incorrectly. I withdraw my point of order, Mr.
Your point of order will be withdrawn. We are now back on the motion from Senator Buchanan. Senator Buchanan, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. So anyway, what happened there was that I had this bill. It was heard in the Senate. And today it was voted down in the House. But not before Representative Kolkmeyer stood and said that I had the same bill in the Senate, and therefore the House should vote my bill down. So I'm dedicating this to Representative Kolkmeyer, who, by the way, is on the Transportation and Ethics Committees, according to the House website. Now, my bill says 304.231, sub 1, the Missouri State Highway Patrol shall have the sole authority to authorize, approve, and operate way station and inspection site bypass services. Now, why did I put that in the bill? It's because MoDOT has been operating them and has refused to allow a competitor into the marketplace to provide bypass services. That's wrong. Not only that, but the person from MoDOT serves on the board of Help Inc., which regulates these services. This is outrageous. And also a person from the Highway Patrol serves on this board. These are regulators serving on the board of an entity they regulate. It's highly unethical. Representative Kolkmeyer, you serve on the Ethics Committee. You ought to understand something about ethics. This is an ethics bill. That's what this is. This is an ethics bill, and it's to stop corruption. The next sentence, the Missouri Department of Transportation shall not have any authority over way station and inspection site bypass service authorization, approval, or regulation other than to approve construction designs for way-in motion system installations on public roads. Well, why did I put that? Because they are right now corruptly doing exactly that. They...
Senate will come to order. The Senate will come to order. Senator, you may proceed.
The Highway Department is preventing a competitor from entering the marketplace against Prepass Incorporated and thereby hurting the economy of Missouri because, as we all know, competition in the marketplace is a positive effect that we would all, every single one of us, champion. Sub 2. The Missouri State Highway Patrol shall enter into an agreement or contract with more than one private entity, if available, to provide way station and inspection site bypass services within the state and shall support way station and inspection site bypass services operating within the state. Now, why did I put that in the bill? It's because they are now preventing it. The very people who regulate this industry are preventing competitors from entering into the marketplace. This is outrageous. This should not be allowed to happen. It is happening here in Missouri, and my bill goes over there, and they kill my bill, then T.J. Berry's bill, you know, basically because it was my bill. So I just want them to know, as I continue, that there are consequences when you do stuff like this and kill, not even, this isn't even a Senate bill. This is T.J. Berry's House bill. But they're killing it. There are consequences when you talk about a senator and his bill and kill it. Number 3, The Missouri State Highway Patrol shall require all way station and inspection site bypass service providers to provide unrestricted real-time data access to their way in motion systems and associated equipment to the state and to other way station and inspection site bypass service providers. Now, why did I put that in the bill? It's because the WIMS, the weight in motion system detectors, are owned by the state. We own them. And so what they have done is they have gotten a contractor to put them in for free in return for using them, but because of that they're saying, well, we're not going to let other competitors use them. But they are owned by the state of Missouri. The competitors should be allowed to use them. That's why I put it into the bill. Number four, the Missouri State Highway Patrol shall, when it is in the best interest of the state, require way station and inspection site bypass service providers to share real-time access to way in motion systems and associated data for purposes of reducing the impact or cost of duplicative system installation or operations or of maintenance to public roads. In the event such requirement is subsequently applied to a pre-existing way-in-motion system, the state shall allocate reasonable cost sharing based on use among all users sharing the system with a cost base to include costs of ongoing support and maintenance and any undepreciable capital costs. Why did I put that into the bill? It's because the state of Missouri, the Highway and Transportation Department, and the State Highway Patrol were requiring the competitor, which is named DriveWise, to put in their own weight and motion systems, duplicating it when they both would end up being owned by the state. That is outrageous, to require the duplication of many millions of dollars. Outrageous. No, that is not okay. And so in order to make it fair and to say that they would pay their fair share, I'm requiring the competitors to actually pony up and pay for their share of the maintenance costs. Number five, the Missouri State Highway Patrol shall not impose any arbitrary requirement on the number of way station and inspection site bypass service sites an entity may operate in the state, and instead shall allow market forces to determine the location and number of service sites each entity operates in the state, subject only to the Missouri State Highway Patrol finding that any proposed site provides value to the state. So why did I put that into the bill? I put it into the bill because the State Highway Patrol and the department, MoDOT, were actually preventing the competitor from going in and providing a service that they could market to their consumers, i.e. the truckers. The truckers can save a lot of money by using a bypass service. Point six, the Missouri State Highway Patrol shall apply consistent rules and rates across all way station and inspection site bypass services, including with regard to credit given to way station bypass service providers that provide additional data access rights to the state and to other way station bypass service providers. So why did I put that into the bill? It's because they weren't doing it. There needs to be consistent rules that all of the competitors in the market can live by, that needs to be fair, and they need to not give a benefit to the company on whose board they serve. It is outrageous. Number seven, no state employee, representative, or designee under Section 304.230 shall be an officer or director of any entity that provides way in motion services within the state. No state employee, representative, or designee under Section 304.230 shall own any duty, fiduciary or otherwise, to an entity that provides way in motion services within the state. Contracts in derogation of this subsection shall be unenforceable as against the public policy of the state. Now, why did I put that in there? Because the Federal Bureau of Investigation is investigating this incident, if you have been reading the news. And if we were to pass this bill, representative. Maybe we could head this off and eliminate this problem before somebody goes to jail. That's why you needed to let my bill pass. But no. No, we've got a person on MoDOT and a former person from the State Highway Patrol serving on the board, and we've got a person from the Trucking Association, it's my understanding, serving on the board. I mean, they actually lobby us, the members of the legislature, on this bill. It's amazing. Number 8, application to establish or operate a way station and inspection site bypass service site shall be made to the Missouri State Highway Patrol in the form of a request for a memorandum of understanding signed by the entity seeking to establish or operate the service site. Basically saying that if you want to be in the marketplace as a competitor, you sign a memorandum of understanding to initiate the process. Number 9, the Missouri State Highway Patrol shall promulgate the rules and regulations necessary to affect this section. And then there's the boilerplate language of any rule or portion, etc. Why? Because if you promulgate rules out and open in the public will have an opportunity to opine on them and put input in, which is an important part of our process. Number 10, the Missouri State Highway Patrol may set criteria for the installation of way in motion sensors or other technologies into the roadway or right-of-way which do not exceed American Society for Testing and Materials Type 1 standards. Such criteria shall be neutral as to what technology is implemented. The Missouri State Highway Patrol shall require way station and inspection site bypass service providers when making bypass determinations to adjust all weight readings upward by the amount equal to the level of inaccuracy tested in the installed way in motion system. So they're saying we are not going to advantage one competitor over another by saying their technology is better or worse. We are going to let the free market decide. That's the way our state should work. And number 11, the Missouri State Highway Patrol shall approve or deny requests for a memorandum of understanding within 60 days of receipt. Any such decision is subject to review by the Administrative Hearing Commission. Well, that's just to say you're not going to delay the application and, in effect, deny the application, because that's something that they probably would do. Now, you know, this is a good bill that's designed to fix a real big problem, and it is tarnishing the state of Missouri, tarnishing the state, because we've got the Federal Bureau of Investigation looking into this, and they're like one iota away from opening up a major investigation into this. So it goes over to the House, and Representative Kolkmeyer stands up on the floor of the House and says, hey, this is the senator from Schaaf District's bill. We shouldn't be doing anything to help the senator from Schaaf District, thereby sticking it to T.J. Berry and burying this bill, which is designed to increase the ethics of the state of Missouri. And by the way, once again, Representative Kolkmeyer serves on the Ethics Committee. So I'm very disappointed, and as a result, there has to be a price paid. And I think we all remembered yesterday when there was a price paid for something that the House did. And I don't care what the House bill is, but Representative Kolkmeyer, you need to be aware that when you do stuff, there are consequences, and this, what's happening right now, is the consequence. And every minute that is spent on the floor of the Senate talking about one thing is a minute that will not be spent on May 12th talking about another thing. So, Representative Kolkmeyer, you just take responsibility for any bills that don't pass on the last day of session because of the amount of time that is being spent right here and right now. Mr. President, yesterday I was reading from page 16 of a book, and it was the national bestseller, Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion, and I left off on page 16. I distributed this to the members so you can follow along and learn about the psychology of persuasion and how it is that we, the members of the legislature, are persuaded when we receive gifts. And I had been talking about the influence of the reciprocity rule. And the reciprocity rule is that when somebody gives you a gift, no matter how small it is, you have an overpowering desire to repay. To repay that, you feel obligated, much obliged, thank you, I appreciate the gift, but you have an overpowering need to pay that back. And so where I left off was the rule is overpowering. And if you'd like to follow along on page 16, you may. One of the reasons reciprocation can be used so effectively as a device for gaining another's compliance is its power. The rule possesses awesome strength, often producing...
Senate will come to order. The Senate will come to order. Please take your conversation to the side galleries to the rear of the chamber. Senator, you may proceed.
Often producing a yes response to a request that, except for an existing feeling of indebtedness, would have surely been refused. Some evidence of how the rule's force can overpower the influence of other factors that normally determine whether a request will be complied with can be seen in a second result of the Regan study. Besides his interest in the impact of the reciprocity rule on compliance, Regan was also interested in how liking for a person affects the tendency to comply with that person's request. To measure how liking toward Joe affected the subject's decisions to buy his raffle tickets, Regan had them fill out several rating scales indicating how much they liked Joe. He then compared their liking responses with the number of tickets they had purchased from Joe. There was a significant tendency for subjects to buy more raffle tickets from Joe the more they liked him, which that just figures, it seems to me, kind of intuitive. But this alone is hardly a startling finding. Most of us would have guessed that people are more willing to do a favor for someone they like. The interesting thing about the Regan experiment, however, is that the relationship between liking and compliance was completely wiped out in the condition under which subjects had been given a Coke by Joe. For those who owed him a favor, it made no difference whether they liked him or not. They felt a sense of obligation to repay him, and they did. The subjects in that condition who indicated that they disliked Joe bought just as many of his tickets as did those who indicated that they liked him. The rule for reciprocity was so strong that it simply overwhelmed the influence of a factor, liking for the requester, that normally affects the decision to comply. So it doesn't matter if they like you or not. If you give them a gift, they're going to feel obligated to repay that gift, whether they like you or not. So I suppose that means that if somebody gives me a campaign contribution, whether I like them or not, I am going to feel obligated to repay that somehow. It's human nature, and we are not immune to that effect, senators. Think of the implications. People we might ordinarily dislike, unsavory or unwelcome sales operators, disagreeable acquaintances, representatives of strange or unpopular organizations, can greatly increase the chance that we will do what they wish merely by providing us with a small favor prior to their requests. Let's take an example that by now many of us have encountered. The Hare Krishna Society is an Eastern religious sect with century-old roots traceable to the Indian city of Calcutta. But its spectacular modern-day story occurred in the 1970s when it experienced a remarkable growth, not only in followers, but also in wealth and property. The economic growth was funded through a variety of activities, the principal and still most visible of which is the request for donations by society members from passersby in public places. During the early history of the group in this country, the solicitation for contributions was attempted in a fashion memorable for anyone who saw it. Groups of Krishna devotees, often with shaved heads and wearing ill-fitting robes, leg wrappings, beads, and bells, would canvass a city street, chanting and bobbing in unison while begging for funds. Although highly effective as a technique for gaining attention, this form of fundraising did not work especially well. The average American considered the Krishnas weird, to say the least, and was reluctant to provide money to support them. It quickly became clear to the society that it had a considerable public relations problem. The people looked, dressed, or acted. The people being asked for contributions did not like the way the members looked, dressed, or acted. Had the society been an ordinary commercial organization, the solution would have been simple. Change the things the public did not like. But the Krishnas are a religious organization, and the way members look, dress, and act is partially tied to religious factors. Because in any denomination, religious factors are typically resistant to change because of worldly considerations, the Krishna leadership was faced with a real dilemma. On the one hand were beliefs, modes of dress, and hairstyles that had religious significance. On the other hand, threatening the organization's financial welfare were the less than positive feelings of the American public towards these things. What's a sect to do? The Krishna's resolution was brilliant. They switched to a fundraising tactic that made it unnecessary for target persons to have positive feelings toward the fundraisers. They began to employ a donation request procedure that engaged the rule for reciprocation, which, as demonstrated by the Regan study, is strong enough to overcome the factor of dislike for the requester. The new strategy still involves the solicitation of contributions in public places with much pedestrian traffic. Airports are a favorite. But now, before a donation is requested, the target person is given a gift, a book, usually the Bhagavad Gita, the Back to Godhead magazine of the society, or, in the most cost-effective version, a flower. The unsuspecting passerby who suddenly finds a flower pressed into his hands or pinned to his jacket is under no circumstances allowed to give it back, even if he asserts that he does not want it. "No, it is our gift to you," says the solicitor, refusing to accept it. Only after the Krishna member has thus brought the force of the reciprocation rule to bear on the subject is the target asked to provide a contribution to the society. This benefactor before beggar strategy has been wildly successful for the Hare Krishna Society, producing large-scale economic gains and funding the ownership of temples, businesses, houses, and property in 321 centers in the United States and overseas. As an aside, it is instructive that the reciprocation rule has begun to outlive its usefulness for the Krishnas, not because the rule itself is any less potent societally, but because we have found ways to prevent the Krishnas from using it on us. After once falling victim to their tactic, many travelers are now alert to the presence of robed Krishna Society solicitors in airports and train stations, adjusting their paths to avoid an encounter and preparing beforehand to ward off a solicitor's gift. Although the society has tried to counter this increased vigilance by instructing members to be dressed and groomed in modern styles to avoid immediate recognition when soliciting, some actually carry flight bags or suitcases, even disguise has not worked especially well for the Krishnas. Too many individuals now know better than to accept unrequested offerings in public places like airports. Furthermore, airport administrators have initiated a number of procedures designed to forewarn us of the Krishna's true identity and intent. Thus, it is now common airport practice to restrict the Krishna's soliciting activity to certain areas of the airport and to announce through signs and the public address system that the Krishna's are soliciting there. It is a testament to the societal value of reciprocation that we have chosen to fight the Krishna's mostly by seeking to avoid rather than to withstand the force of their gift-giving. The reciprocity rule that empowers their tactic is too strong and socially beneficial for us to want to violate it. Politics is another area in which the power of the reciprocity rule shows itself. Reciprocation tactics appear at every level. At the top, elected officials engage in log rolling and the exchange of favors that makes politics the place of strange bedfellows. And we do that all the time here. You vote for my bill and I'll help you with yours. That's log rolling. The out-of-character vote of one of our elected representatives on a bill or measure can often be understood as a favor returned to the bill's sponsor. Political analysts were amazed at Lyndon Johnson's ability to get so many of his programs through Congress during his early administration. Even members of Congress who were thought to be strongly opposed to the proposals were voting for them. Close examination by political scientists has found the cause to be not so much Johnson's political savvy as the large score of favors he had been able to provide to other legislators during his many years of power in the House and Senate. As president, he was able to produce a truly remarkable amount of legislation in a short time by calling in those favors. It is interesting that this same process may account for the problems Jimmy Carter had in getting his programs through Congress during his early administration, despite heavy Democratic majorities in both House and Senate. Carter came to the presidency from outside the Capitol Hill establishment. He campaigned on his outside Washington identity, saying that he was indebted to no one there. Much of his legislative difficulty upon arriving may be traced to the fact that no one there was indebted to him. And I guess, Mr. President, that probably means that I'm probably not going to do very good over in the House because I haven't put out a whole lot of favors. And I will have to say, I don't think that our governor has either, which is, I find, kind of interesting. At another level, we can see the recognized strength of the reciprocity rule in the desire of corporations and individuals to provide judicial and legislative officials with gifts and favors, and in the series of legal restrictions against such gifts and favors. Even with legitimate political contributions, the stockpiling of obligations often underlies the stated purpose of supporting a favorite candidate. And you know, I've often said that they will give you the check with the mantra, this is an important thing for our company. That's what I've seen. Or my favorite one is when the healthcare industry says, competition doesn't work in healthcare. And in fact, it does actually work in healthcare. But so many times, our contributions are associated with those kind of mantras, and we are swayed by those. And our public policy that we generate also is. How many times have you heard somebody say something on the order of, hey, I went around the state and raised money for you? How many times have you heard that? One look at the list of companies and organizations that contribute to the campaigns of both major candidates in important elections gives evidence of such motives. A skeptic requiring direct evidence of the quid pro quo expected by political contributors might look to the remarkably bald-faced admission by Charles H. Keating, Jr., who was later convicted on multiple counts of fraud in this country's savings and loan disaster. Addressing the question of whether a connection existed between the $1.3 million he had contributed to the campaigns of five U.S. senators and their subsequent actions on his behalf against federal regulators, he asserted, "I want to say in the most forceful way I can, I certainly hope so." In other words, he's saying, he sure does hope that $1.3 million, you know, affected the outcome. I mean, else it would have been given for nothing. At the grassroots level, local political organizations have learned that the principal way to keep their candidates in office is to make sure they provide a wide range of little favors to the voters. The, quote, ward healers, end quote, of many cities still operate effectively in this fashion. But ordinary citizens are not alone in trading political support for small personal favors. During the 1992 presidential campaign, primary campaign, actress Sally Kellerman was asked why she was lending her name and efforts to the candidacy of Democratic hopeful Jerry Brown. Her reply, 20 years ago, I asked 10 friends to help me move. He was the only one who showed up. So she was endorsing him because he went 10 years earlier and helped her move, and he was the only one of 10 who showed up. Oh, it was 20 years earlier. Of course, the power of reciprocity can be found in the merchandising field as well. Although the number of possible examples is large, let's examine a pair of familiar ones deriving from, quote, the free sample, end quote. As a marketing technique, the free sample has long and effective history. In most instances, a small amount of the relevant product is provided to potential customers for the stated purpose of allowing them to try to see if they like it. And certainly this is a legitimate desire of the manufacturer, to expose the public to the qualities of the product. The beauty of the free sample, however, is that it is also a gift and, as such, can engage the reciprocity rule. In true jiu-jitsu fashion, the promoter who gives free samples can release the natural indebting force inherent in a gift while innocently appearing to have only the intention to inform. How many times have you been going through Walmart and there's a person standing there, would you like to try this lump of cheese or this little, you know, breaded shrimp or some little thing? And then you just kind of have this overpowering urge to go ahead and buy a chunk of their cheese or whatever. I mean, they do that because it really does work. You give a free gift, and then you have an obligation to reciprocate and buy their product. And they know it, and they pay those people, and they're not like Walmart employees or Sam's Club employees. They are paid by the company. A favorite place for free samples is the supermarket, where customers are frequently provided with small cubes of a certain variety of cheese or meat to try. Many people find it difficult to accept a sample from the always smiling attendant, return only the toothpick, and walk away. I do that more than not. I just like try it and go like, thank you. My daughter worked at Whole Foods in Chicago, and she told me that they just, you know, they expect you to go and try that stuff. And so she all the time goes and tries everything and usually doesn't buy it. Instead, they buy some of the product, even if they might not have liked it especially well. A highly effective variation on this marketing procedure is illustrated in the case, cited by Vance Packard in The Hidden Persuaders, of the Indiana supermarket operator who sold an outstanding 1,000 pounds of cheese in a few hours one day by putting out the cheese and inviting customers to cut off slivers for themselves as free samples. A different version of the free sample tactic is used by the Amway Corporation, a rapid growth company that manufactures and distributes household and personal care products in a vast national network of door-to-door neighborhood sales. The company, which has grown from a basement-run operation a few years ago to a $1.5 billion yearly sales business, makes use of the free sample in a device called the Bug, B-U-G. The Bug consists of a collection of Amway products, bottles of furniture polish, detergent or shampoo, spray containers of deodorizers, insect killers or window cleaners, carried to the customer's home in a specially designed tray or just a polyethylene bag. The confidential Amway career manual then instructs the salesperson to leave the Bug with the customer for 24, 48, or 72 hours at no cost or obligation to her. Just tell her you would like her to try the products. That's an offer no one can refuse. At the end of the trial period, the Amway representative returns and picks up orders for those of the products the customer wishes to purchase. Since few customers use up the entire contents of even one of the product containers in such a short time, the salesperson may then take the remaining product portions in the Bug to the next potential customer down the line or across the street and start the process again. Many Amway representatives have several Bugs circulating in their districts at one time. Of course, by now you and I know that the customer who has accepted and used the Bug products has been trapped into facing the influence of the reciprocity rule. Many such customers yield to a sense of obligation in order to order those of the salesperson's products that they have tried and thereby partially consumed. And of course, by now, the Amway Corporation knows that to be the case. Even in a company with an excellent a growth record as Amway, the Bug device has created a big stir. Reports by state distributors to the parent company record a remarkable effect. So the question that you have is, why do you think we give away flags and magnets and things at parades? Why do we give things away when we go to people's doors and knock on them and ask for their vote? Because when you give them something, even if it's something that they don't want, they feel obligated and they are much more likely to vote for you. That's why we do that. And when people give you something, you are much more likely to vote for their bill or vote against the bill they want you to vote against. Continuing on. Unbelievable! We've never seen such excitement. Product is moving at an unbelievable rate, and we've only just begun. Local distributors took the Bugs, and we've had an unbelievable increase in sales. This came from an Illinois distributor. The most fantastic retail idea we've ever had. On the average, customers purchased about half the total amount of the Bug when it is picked up. In one word, tremendous. We've never seen a response within our entire organization like this, which from a Massachusetts distributor. The Amway distributors appear to be bewildered, happily so, but nonetheless bewildered by the startling power of the Bug. Of course, by now, you and I should not be. The reciprocity rule governs many situations of a purely interpersonal nature where neither money nor commercial exchange is at issue. Perhaps my favorite illustration of the enormous force available from the reciprocation weapon of influence comes from such a situation. The European scientist Eibel Eibesfeld provides the account of a German soldier during World War I whose job was to capture enemy soldiers for interrogation. Because of the nature of the trench warfare at that time, it was extremely difficult for armies to cross the no man's land between opposing front lines. but it was not so difficult for a single soldier to crawl across and slip into an enemy trench position. The armies of the Great War had experts who regularly did so to capture an enemy soldier, who would then be brought back for questioning. The German expert of our account had often successfully completed such missions in the past and was sent on another. Once again, he skillfully negotiated the area between fronts and surprised a lone enemy soldier in his trench. The unsuspecting soldier, who had been eating at the time, was easily disarmed. The frightened captive, with only a piece of bread in his hand, then performed what may have been the most important act of his life. He gave his enemy some of the bread. So affected was the German by this gift that he could not complete his mission. He turned from his benefactor and recrossed the no man's land empty-handed to face the wrath of his superiors. So just giving him a piece of his bread was enough to invoke the reciprocity rule, and the German soldier gave up, went back across no man's land, and let this soldier go and live. That's the power of the reciprocity rule. An equally compelling point regarding the power of reciprocity comes from an account of a woman who saved her life not by giving a gift, as did the captured soldier, but by refusing a gift and the powerful obligations that went with it. The woman, Diane Louis, was an inhabitant of Jonestown, Guyana, in November of 1978, when its leader, Jim Jones, called for the mass suicide of all residents, most of whom compliantly drank and died from a vat of poison-laced Kool-Aid. Diane Louis, however, rejected Jones' command and made her way out of Jonestown and into the jungle. She attributes her willingness to do so to her earlier refusal to accept special favors from him when she was in need. She turned down his offer of special food while she was ill because, quote, "I knew once he gave me those privileges, he'd have me. I didn't want to owe him nothing," end quote. The rule enforces uninvited debts. Earlier, we suggested that the power of the reciprocity rule is such that by first doing us a favor, strange, disliked, or unwelcome others can enhance the chance that we will comply with one of their requests. However, there is another aspect of the rule besides its power that allows this phenomenon to occur. Another person can trigger a feeling of indebtedness by doing us an uninvited favor. Recall that the rule only states that we should provide to others the kind of actions they have provided to us. It does not require us to have asked for what we have received in order to feel obligated to repay. For instance, the Disabled American Veterans Organization reports that its simple mail appeal for donations produces a response rate of about 18%. But when the mailing also includes an unsolicited gift of gummed individualized address labels, the success rate nearly doubles to 35%. This is not to say that we might not feel a stronger sense of obligation to return a favor we have requested, only that such a request is not necessary to produce our indebtedness. So when you get the labels in the mail, you are more likely to send the donation. And I wonder if that depends on whether you are willing to use the labels or not. That is always a question that I ask. So should I just throw the labels away because that seems like such a waste? Or should I keep them and use them? And the question is, if I keep them and use them, am I even more likely to send them a donation. And since it says, you know, the disabled American veterans, I'm probably more likely to do it. If we reflect for a moment about the social purpose of the reciprocity rule, we can see why this should be so. The rule was established to promote the development of reciprocal relationships between individuals so that one person could initiate such a relationship without the fear of loss. If the rule is to support that purpose, then, an uninvited first favor must have the ability to create an obligation. Recall also that reciprocal relationships confer an extraordinary advantage upon cultures that foster them, and that consequently there will be strong pressures to ensure that the rule does serve its purpose. Little wonder then that the influential French anthropologist Marcel Mauss, in describing the social pressures surrounding the gift-giving process in human culture, can state, "There is an obligation to give, an obligation to receive, and an obligation to repay." Although the obligation to repay constitutes the essence of the reciprocity rule, it is the obligation to receive that makes the rule so easy to exploit. The obligation to receive reduces our ability to choose whom we wish to be indebted to and puts that power in the hands of others. Let's re-examine a pair of earlier examples to get a sense of how that process works. But before I continue reading, I want to tell you, I can think back on my legislative career and think of times when I did something for a bill that I believed in, and that bill passed, and I put it over the top. And then later on, I received a contribution from the sponsor of the bill. I wonder if they felt obligated to me by virtue of the reciprocity rule. Anyway, let's re-examine a pair of earlier examples to get a sense of how the process works. First, let's return to the Regan study, where we find that the favor causing subjects to double the number of raffle tickets purchased from Joe was not the one they had requested. Joe had voluntarily left the room and returned with one Coke for himself and one for the subject. There was not a single subject who refused the Coke. It is easy to see why it would have been awkward to turn down Joe's favor. Joe had already spent his money. A soft drink was an appropriate favor in the situation, especially since Joe had one himself. It would have been considered impolite to reject Joe's thoughtful action. Nevertheless, receipt of that Coke produced an indebtedness that manifested itself clearly when Joe announced his desire to sell some raffle tickets. Notice the important asymmetry here. All the genuinely free choices were Joe's. He chose the form of the initial favor. He chose the form of the return favor. Of course, one could say that the subject had the choice of saying no to both of Joe's offers. But those would have been tough choices. To have said no at either point would have required the subject to go against the natural cultural forces favoring reciprocation arrangements that Jiu-Jitsu Joe had aligned himself with. The extent to which even an unwanted favor once received can produce indebtedness is aptly illustrated in the soliciting technique of the Hare Krishna Society. During systematic observation of the airport soliciting strategy of the Krishnas, I have recorded a variety of responses from target persons. One of the most regularly occurs as follows. An airport visitor, a businessman, let's say, is hurriedly walking along through a densely peopled area. The Krishna solicitor steps in front of him and hands him a flower. The man, reacting with surprise, takes it. Almost immediately, he tries to give it back, saying that he does not want the flower. The Krishna member responds that it is a gift from the Krishna Society and that it is the man's to keep. However, a donation to further the society's good works would be appreciated. Again, the target protests, "I don't want this flower. Here, take it." And again, the solicitor refuses, "It is our gift to you, sir." There is visible conflict on the businessman's face. Should he keep the flower and walk away without giving anything in return? Or should he yield to the pressure of the deeply ingrained reciprocity rule and provide a contribution? By now, the conflict has spread from his face to his posture. He leans away, back from his benefactor, seemingly about to break free, only to be drawn back again by the pull of the rule. Once more, his body tilts away, but it's no use. He cannot disengage. With a nod of resignation, he fishes in his pocket and comes up with a dollar or two that is graciously accepted. Now he can walk away freely, and he does, gift in hand, until he encounters a waste container where he throws the flower. Purely by accident, I happen to witness a scene that demonstrates that the Krishnas now know very well how frequently their gifts are unwanted by the people who receive them. While spending a day observing a soliciting Krishna group at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport a few years ago, I noticed that one of the group members would frequently leave the central area and return with more flowers to supply her companions. As it happened, I had decided to take a break just as she was leaving on one of her supply missions. Having nowhere to go, I followed. Her journey turned out to be a garbage route. She went from trash can to trash can beyond the immediate area to retrieve all the flowers that had been discarded by Krishna targets. She then returned with the cache of recovered flowers, some that had been recycled who knows how many times, and distributed them to be profitably cycled through the reciprocation process once more. The thing that really impressed me about all this was that most of the discarded flowers had brought donations from the people who had cast them away. The nature of the reciprocity rule is such that a gift so unwanted that it was jettisoned at the first opportunity had nonetheless been effective and exploitable. I'm curious. Is this bill that we're talking about here in this note? This bill is. Okay. I just want everybody to know that I'm not trying to kill this bill, just so that you know. I'm not trying to kill this bill. I'm killing another bill on Friday, May the 12th, 2017. That's what I'm doing right now. I don't even know what bill it is, but I'm killing it. In fact, I'm not killing it. It is Representative Kolkmeier who is killing it, not me. I'm not killing the bill that's under consideration, because eventually I'm going to withdraw my motion and we'll continue on with this bill, just so that you know, Senator. The ability of uninvited gifts to produce feelings of obligation is recognized by a variety of organizations besides the Krishnas. How many times have each of us received small gifts through the mail, personally addressed labels, greeting cards, key rings from charity agencies that ask for funds in an accompanying note? I've received 5 in just the past year, 2 from disabled veterans groups and the others from missionary schools or hospitals. In each case, there was a common thread in the accompanying message. The goods that were enclosed were to be considered a gift from the organization, and any money I wished to send should not be regarded as payment, but rather as a return offering. As the letter from one of the missionary programs stated, the packet of greeting cards I had been sent was not to be directly paid for, but it was designed to encourage your kindness. If we look past the obvious tax advantage, we can see a reason why it would be beneficial for the organization to have the cards viewed as a gift instead of merchandise. There is a strong cultural pressure to reciprocate a gift, even an unwanted one, but there is no such pressure to purchase an unwanted commercial product. The rule can trigger unfair exchanges. There is yet one other feature of the reciprocity rule that allows it to be exploited for profit. Paradoxically, the rule developed to promote equal exchanges between partners, yet it can be used to bring about decidedly unequal results. The rule demands that one sort of action be reciprocated with a similar sort of action. A favor is to be met with another favor. It is not to be met with neglect, and certainly not with attack. But within the similar action boundaries, considerable flexibility is allowed. A small initial favor can produce a sense of obligation to agree to a substantially larger return favor. Since, as we have already seen, the rule allows one person to choose the nature of the indebting first favor and the nature of the debt-canceling return favor, we could easily be manipulated into an unfair exchange by those who might wish to exploit the rule. Once again, we can turn to the Regan experiment for evidence. Remember in that study that Joe gave one group of subjects a bottle of Coca-Cola as an initiating gift, and later asked all subjects to buy some of his raffle tickets at 25 cents apiece. What I have so far neglected to mention is that the study was done in the late 1960s when the price of a Coke was a dime. The average subject who had been given a 10-cent drink bought two of Joe's raffle tickets, although some bought as many as seven. Even if we look just at the average subject, though, we can tell that Joe made quite a deal. A 500% return on investment is respectable indeed. But in Joe's case, even a 500% return amounted to only 50 cents. Can the reciprocity rule produce meaningfully large differences in the size of the exchanged favors? Under the right circumstances, it certainly can. Take, for instance, the account of a student of mine concerning a day she remembers ruefully. About 1 year ago, I couldn't start my car. As I was sitting there, a guy in the parking lot came over and eventually jump-started the car. I said, thanks, and he said, you're welcome. As he was leaving, I said that if he ever needed a favor, to stop by. About a month later, the guy knocked on my door and asked to borrow my car for 2 hours, as his was in the shop. I felt somewhat obligated, but uncertain, since the car was pretty new and he looked very young. Later, I found out that he was underage and had no insurance. Anyway, I lent him the car. He totaled it. How could it happen that an intelligent young woman would agree to turn over her new car to a virtual stranger and a youngster at that? Because he had done her a small favor a month earlier. Or, more generally, why should it be that small first favors often stimulate larger return favors? One important reason concerns the clearly unpleasant character of the feeling of indebtedness. Most of us find it highly disagreeable to be in a state of obligation. It weighs heavily on us and demands to be removed. It is not difficult to trace the source of this feeling, because reciprocal arrangements are so vital in human social systems, we have been conditioned to be uncomfortable when beholden. If we were to ignore breezily the need to return another's initial favor, we would stop one reciprocal sequence dead and would make it less likely that our benefactor would do such favors in the future. Neither event is in the best interests of society. Consequently,
Senator from Franklin, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, could you lay that bill on the informal calendar?
That bill will be laid on the informal calendar. Senator from Buchanan.
I have a point of order.
Senator, I will come to you in just a second. We need to get a clarification on the previous ruling. That bill will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from Buchanan.
Mr. President, my point of order is that I had the floor on a motion that I made, and that motion was to postpone debate on that bill. He may withdraw it, but I should still have the floor and continue to debate my motion.
That point of order will be referred to the President pro tem of the Senate. Does any senator desire to speak on the point of order? Does any senator desire to be heard on the point of order? Senator from the 5th, purpose to rise.
Can I inquire the senator from the 34th?
You may not. Senator, you may speak on the point of order. Senator from Buchanan.
My motion was a privileged motion. A privileged motion takes precedence in the order of debate. And while it may have been referring to the bill, his bill, my motion was not on his bill. It was about his bill, and it should take precedence, and it should not. I would ask that my point of order be well taken.
Senator from Newton, purpose to rise.
I'll take the point of order under advisement.
The point of order will be taken under advisement. Senator from Buchanan, what purpose
do you... Do I still have the floor?
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
To request of you whether or not I still have the floor.
You have the floor now because I'm recognizing you.
Okay. May I continue discussion on my motion?
Senator from Buchanan, what purpose do you rise?
I would like to continue speaking on my motion.
The motion has been removed with the bill. The bill was placed on the informal calendar. That ruling has been under advisement by the Senate, the pro tem of the Senate.
And when that bill comes up, that ruling will... Okay, I understand. Thank you.
We are now back on House Committee Substitute for House Bill 302... Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
House bill's on third reading.
Okay. I am now back to Senator from Cole. Senator from the 19th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, may I inquire the Senator from Buchanan?
Senator from Buchanan, do you yield to an inquiry from the Senator from the 19th? Senator from the 19th, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, it's been an interesting day. Obviously, I'm new here to the Senate, and so I don't know what's normal and what's not, although I've heard from some of my colleagues around us that this is a bit abnormal for this year. But, the rules of the Senate are kind of meant to tie things up at times.
I think what you're seeing is the new normal, Senator.
So if we, I've heard you obviously speak a lot this year, but I don't know that I know a whole lot about you as an individual. And obviously, we're 34 senators, and we try to do our best to build relationships and try to get to know each other the best that we can. So you're from St. Joe, correct?
Yes, Senator, and you're from Boone. Correct?
I'm from Boone, Columbia. I was born in Joplin. I'm trying to get the president to do a birthplace of Caleb Rowden sign outside Joplin. He hasn't.
Uh-oh. You broke the rules of the Senate.
He hasn't gone there yet.
He hasn't gaveled you yet, though.
I appreciate that. And you are a doc.
I'm a family physician.
Family
among
physician.
Other things.
And then you, I think I've heard that you also own some sort of Med Mal coalition.
No, actually, I don't own it.
Okay.
At all.
Okay.
I'm just
just a part of it.
Just part of it. Yeah.
So, okay, so
by the way, that company is owned by the people it insures.
Gotcha.
It's formed under the
383.
Chapter 383.
Correct. Yeah. Okay. So, you mentioned a couple things that were of interest to me. One, I was actually listening to the reciprocity rule, and it's an interesting concept. I was also listening to your summary of the ongoing investigation with. What were the names of the companies? I don't know them. The transportation.
Right.
Way station. And I thought that was interesting. I didn't know anything about that, didn't anything about those companies
just
until...
Read the Post-Dispatch.
Yeah, I did. And it is obviously certainly an interesting debate. They both sides of that issue have lobbyists, right?
I don't know. I imagine they do.
Yeah, I would assume they do. And then also, I would assume, maybe, I don't know this to be true, is your company large enough to need a lobbyist to help navigate the craziness that is the General Assembly?
Not at this time, no.
Okay, so your company at this time doesn't have a lobbyist, okay. So I was just curious, that when I read the Post-Dispatch article, I genuinely curious about... that issue, and you didn't know it. I didn't know anything about the companies. I didn't know anything about the players. Didn't know anything about the lobbyists that were involved. And so I looked and found a list of individuals for both sides. And then I also found that the lobbyists for DriveWise, which is one of the other companies, is a lobbyist for. A number of companies, obviously. One of which, I believe, is Missouri Doctors Mutual Insurance Company in St. Joseph. Is that correct?
State your point, Senator. Are you saying that, are you trying to imply that because of the fact that the company with which I work has retained a lobbyist in the past.
But you just
and
said
same lobbyist also represents the company that is involved in the DriveWise.
But you just said that your company doesn't currently retain a lobbyist.
There's some problem there.
Does company...
Are you alleging that there's a problem there?
Does your company currently retain the lobbyist or not?
No.
Okay. Even though that lobbyist membership is still active.
Well, that's up to the lobbyists, whether they list somebody or not.
It's also, so there's also something that, as I was doing research, stumbled upon a Post-Dispatch article from 2016 that's called Lawmakers Bunking with Lobbyists, Show More Cozy Connections in Capitol. And as you know, I share your sentiment that we need serious ethics reform. In this chamber, it's the reason why I was the sponsor of the revolving door that got watered down last year, but passed, and have been the sponsor previously of gift ban legislation.
Let's see. Did you read that article? By the way, the lobbyist with which you're talking reported on the Ethics Committee website that he rents a room to both myself and my chief of staff. Is that what you're about to say? That is there for you to go and look it up.
And that lobbyist, coincidentally, is the one that lobbies for your company,
right,
and for DriveWise.
And when you develop relationships with people, then you do get information from them. That's a fact.
How'd you become familiar with the DriveWise issue?
How did I become familiar? By the information was brought to me by my friend, the lobbyist, much as it occurs with any issue around here.
Well, I'm not a roommate with a lobbyist. and I'm pretty sure.
Is there some problem? Do you think that, are you trying to imply that in some way, because this information came to me by virtue of a guy who rents a room to me and is a friend and who represents my company from time to time, that there's an impropriety there? What would be that impropriety, Senator?
Well, I mean,
how could I personally benefit from any such thing?
Well, I would...
I mean, you're raising the issue. Go for it.
I would certainly think that...
Does it cast doubt upon my integrity?
Remind me what the rule of reciprocity is again.
No, I've been talking about it. You tell me. What is it that you are trying to imply, Senator? Seriously, Senator, you're standing there. You're divulging facts that are public. What is the point?
So in a scenario where an individual employs a lobbyist and then files a bill on behalf of another client of the lobbyist.
Now, wait a second.
Is also
if I
a roommate,
employ a
is there,
lobbyist,
is there
am I receiving a gift?
Is there a possibility?
Am I receiving a gift?
Is there a possibility that the rule of reciprocity that you have so eloquently spoken about would be relevant in the issue that I just described?
That I would file a bill when I see an obvious episode of corruption going on? Yes.
Three senators standing. Senator from Green, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I seek unanimous consent to introduce a special guest.
Hearing no objection, Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, we've heard a number of things today, and I rise to make this introduction partly to give us a little bit of pause and to think about what we're doing. We're never going to agree with one another. We're never going to agree with all of the words that another member speaks. But I would hope that we could refrain from impugning the character of one another. And my introduction, Mr. President, is of Daniel Boone on your left and my right, who is sitting at the judgment tree there. And I, Mr. President, as much as I am concerned about the issues, the general issues that we're hearing about, I would just point out that none of us should sit in judgment of one another, whether it is a House member that we heard about earlier or one of our own. And I would admonish the body to just look at that picture and consider the fact that we have a long history in this state of working things out. And look at the way they did that. It looks orderly to me, and it looks respectful there at the judgment tree, Boonslick. And I would just ask that we give, you know, we have, what, 12, 15 days left of this legislative session. I don't like what has gone on, but we, rather than sit in judgment of one another, whether it's one of our own or one of the members of the other chamber or one of any of the leaders in state government, I would just respectfully ask that we consider our history and consider the people that we're actually here to serve, and let's get our thoughts and our focus back on them. Thank you, Mr. President.
We are glad to have Daniel Boone with us today. Senators, you may proceed with your debate.
Thank you,
Senator,
Mr. President.
Senator, tell me, who brought to you the idea for the most recent bill that you filed, and did you receive a campaign contribution from that entity? I'm just asking. And the reason that I'm asking, Senator, is that when I pay my rent to Richard McIntosh, I give him a check, he gives me the room, that is the gift, and that is the payment. And it's perfectly legal, meet, and right. And when he works for the company, which is Missouri Doctors Mutual Insurance Company, he gives us his lobbying services, and we write him a check. And that is the transaction. And when he brings to me the case of one of his clients who is a clear example of corruption, and I offer a bill, I am getting nothing in return, nor is he giving me anything in return. And if you are going to stand there and accuse me of doing something illegal or immoral or unethical, then I'm going to start looking at every single one of your bills and see if that entity gave you a campaign contribution. Are you ready to accept that?
Sure.
Okay. Then this interrogation is over.
Three senators standing. Senator from Cola, purpose to rise.
No further business coming before the body. I move we stand adjourned until Monday at 4 p.m.
Hearing no objection.
No, you got a voice vote.
The motion from Senator Cole is that the Senate stand adjourned until Monday at 4 p.m. What's the date?
April 24th.
On April the 24th at 4 p.m. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate is adjourned till Monday at 4 p.m. on April the 24th.